Letty Glenn is a best-selling author and coach. Her company, Letty Glenn Coaching, exists to support individuals with invisible disabilities to know their strengths and apply them to their professional life by exploring themselves on a deeper level and creating an action plan for the transformation. She comes to this through her own growth and experience of having dyslexia. She's also a mom to a child with challenges. And today we have a great conversation about what people can do and how they can help themselves. I think you're going to take away a lot from this conversation. Letty is really down to earth, just really, really easy to talk to. And I hope if you have an invisible disability or if you have challenges with executive function where you just feel like you're burned out or stressing out, reach out to her. The contact information is going to be in the show notes. For those that are new, my name is Eric Jorgensen. I am the host of the ABC's Disability Planning Podcast. I'm also the founder of True North Disability Planning. I started both to raise awareness and help people connect the dots when it comes to the benefits, resources, and services available to those with disabilities. Let's listen in. Welcome, everyone. Today I have with me Letty Glenn with Letty Glenn Coaching. She coaches individuals who have invisible disabilities. But Letty, welcome. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Let's start by defining, you know, what an invisible disability is for the audience. I'm sure most of them know what it is, but if you could just define what you specifically who you work with and what types of disabilities would be classified as invisible.
Mm-hmm. So I primarily work with individuals who have dyslexia or have the signs of dyslexia, since there are 40 million adults who are dyslexic, but only 2 million know that have been labeled as dyslexic, so have had the testing. So there's a lot of people out there that need the help, but might not necessarily have the name to it. And then there's a lot of people out there who have the name, but don't really know what it means. So that's a big part of what we go into. But I also work with individuals who are also on the autism spectrum or any other disability that is not able to be seen by looking at somebody.
Would that include like a traumatic brain injury or?
It can, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because really what I'm working on is how do they set up a goal that's reasonable and how do they set up the steps to get there? So it's how do we find out about ourselves and our strengths and how do we set the goals up in order to meet our goals?
Okay. Let's talk real quick. The numbers you threw out were pretty surprising. 40 million with dyslexia, mm-hmm. but only 2 million diagnosed. And that's mm-hmm. a pretty small percentage that are diagnosed. I don't have the calculator. I'm not doing the math right now. But what are some of the signs of dyslexia that people should be looking for or maybe not should be looking for, but maybe they're, I don't know what's going on with my kid. I don't know what's going on with me, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of it can be someone who takes a while learning how to read or learning how to sound out those words. They need a lot of help if they have dyslexia or another type of learning disability like dysgraphia, dyscalculia. They also might confuse a lot of words. Like for me, I confuse dugout and donut quite a bit, or it's real good when I go to a baseball game and I'm like, ooh, the donut. I wish I could say I haven't done that, but I've done it. Or like tornado and volcano. So two words that sound similar, but they're not the same in any way, shape, or form. It might take longer to respond to questions, so a slower processing time. Or it might be something that you had mastered this today or yesterday, but today it's a struggle. So it might be something that clicks one day and then you struggle with it the next day. Or spelling is another example. Like I spell very phonetic. So when you see a word, when I write something that isn't spelled right, you can sound it out and usually figure out what I'm trying to say.
Well, now we have tools like Grammarly, right? I mean, Grammarly is not a sponsor of the show yet, but if you want to be, you can be. That's a great tool.
I live my life through Grammarly. Even text messages are run through Grammarly for me. So yes, I highly recommend it and endorse it, but they are not paying us anything to say that. Messy handwriting is also can also be a sign. So for instance, when I write, I throw in uppercase in certain parts of words. I have maybe part cursive going on. And I was talking with someone yesterday and they were just talking to me, trying to figure out what's going on with them and what I can do to help them. And so I brought up the handwriting and I took a picture and sent a copy of my handwriting to them. And they're like, oh my God, it looks just like mine. I'm like, yes, because a lot of times if somebody has dyslexia, dysgraphia, writing in cursive is actually very helpful because you're keeping the pen or pencil on the paper. And when you print, you're picking it up each time. So that makes more processing time. But when you're just cursive, you're just going and it's in a flow. So those are the big signs to look out for. There's also a lot of executive functioning things to notice. It might be some disorganization or scattered thoughts, not good at remembering numbers. For example, for myself, I had my son's birthday wrong for the first year. In my head, I was like, it's 4 days after mine. So anyways, dates can be a big struggle. I will never know how many years I'm married. I just won't. My husband will take care of it because it's not something that I can remember. Just like names, I will never remember people's names very well. So those are all big traits that you could look out for if you're wondering if you or someone you know is dyslexic. And it does run in families. So I'm sure I got it from someone that I'm related to. I have guesses. Just like the next generation in my family, it runs in the family.
So if somebody suspects it, is it, and this is a value judgment and I'm asking, but is it in air quotes worth it to get a diagnosis? Does especially later in life, right? In school, I imagine it's really good because it helps the IEP, the 504. Mm-hmm. But once you're an adult, does it really do anything for you to get a diagnosis?
It's, in my opinion, it's more for the sake of knowing and then just guessing. So it's more if they choose to do that, then they might find some resolve in that or know, okay, this is where I need to start looking for help instead of searching for the wide universe of the internet for help.
I'm pushing back a little bit because if they suspect that they're dyslexic, they don't have to search for the, and this could just be me and my ignorance, but.
Well, if they suspect, that means they don't know. So right. They might also be researching and looking at different things, or they might not even know to ask if they are or not.
Got it.
So it might just be typing in, can't remember dates and trying to figure out what it is. Or some people, it just helps to know.
Right.
Exactly what's going on. There's some peace in that.
And that's, and not everything that you mentioned is an automatic qualifier that, you're right. Definitely dyslexic. Like I am horrible with names, but I think most of it's probably because I don't pay enough attention when people introduce themselves.
Right.
You know, that is totally on me. And it is totally something I could do more. If I wanted to make it a priority, I could do something about it. I just choose not to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it just goes in one ear and out the other. But I will remember our conversation and what we talked about.
I might if I thought you were interesting. But it's well, a lot of those tie into like traumatic brain injuries. People I know that have been blown up or been in car accidents and have a TBI, they have a lot of short-term memory issues. They have a lot of problems with, maybe their processing speed is slowed down. A lot of executive function, with especially if they have to do several steps in order, and again, that's where that it may not be dyslexia, but doesn't mean you don't need help.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's where I'm not so hung up on a label, right? Mm-hmm. Like my personal thing is I think we're a little too label happy, right? And then that label becomes our identity. Instead of really, I see it as a tool. Like my son has labels. I have labels. For example, I'm 90% disabled through the VA. I have, so I'm a disabled veteran, in air quotes. I don't identify as having disabilities. And I don't know that me not identifying as having disabilities doesn't mean I don't have disabilities. Like I've had arthritis so bad where I can't lift up a pen. I would argue that it is disabling. So the identity versus label, and I think I lost my train of thought here, but it just, I don't want people getting too hung up on labels. Yeah. By the same token, I feel like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, because I'm also like, well, you need a label for certain things to get supports and services.
Right.
So I guess where I'm coming from is, you can have a label, just don't make it your identity. But you're very public on your about you mm-hmm. being dyslexic. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel when I say that? I mean,
you know, I agree with you on both, coming out both sides of my mouth, as you said. I agree with that, because labels can also put you in a box. And those are the expectations that people have of you before they even get to know you. So it's really a personal call and a judgment call on if you want that label as an adult. Now, for me, I have only for the last couple years have told and been public that I am dyslexic. I have been hiding it my entire life for fear of being found out and for fear of being thought of less than or not as smart. And I have made my career of helping individuals find their voice, but I wasn't helping myself find my voice. So I have decided to become the person that I need for myself as well.
And I appreciate that, Lydia, especially mm-hmm. since you used to be a public school teacher, and I can see mm-hmm. where there may be this stigma or perceived stigma that you're a teacher, but you have dyslexia. What?
And I was a special education teacher. And even as a special education teacher, I didn't tell my students or my peers or the parents, the families, that I was dyslexic or a special education IEP kid as well. And I did that because, one, I felt my credibility might be hurt by that. I didn't want to be put in a box of can only work with certain type of kids or on certain types of subjects or something like that. But it also gave me a lot of insight, because I have been able to sit at every single seat of an IEP meeting as the student, as the teacher, and as a parent. So it gives me a lot of insight on all the different feelings and anxieties that every single person at the table might be feeling. And it also helped me when I was in the classroom and working with kids to help them find a voice and help them find tools and accommodations that can help them in the class as well as outside of the class. So a big thing that I always focus on is advocacy and how do you stand up and speak for yourself and what you need.
I appreciate that. I can see where there'd be that fear that people won't take you seriously or your credibility will take a hit. Mm-hmm. Because there is and I've said this publicly on other podcasts, that part of the reason I don't publicly identify as having disabilities is because of what I perceive as negative perceptions for those with disabilities, like you are mm-hmm. less than. You know, it's unfortunately a part of our, you know, it's part of our society, right? I mean, we see that with the employment rates and how much higher the unemployment rate is for people with disabilities. I think that's getting a little better. And I don't think it's necessarily because people are like, oh, you have a disability, I'm not going to hire you. I think a lot of it is the way our systems are designed. If you don't interview well, you're not going to get a job. If you don't write your resume well, you're not going to get to the interview because the computers are going to screen you out. And people with disabilities, in my opinion, have a disadvantage in a lot of those areas. But going back to what you were saying about the credibility and the fact that you were able to get insight by being literally at every seat of the IEP table, to borrow a phrase I can't stand, it's a superpower, right? And I hate it. I hate the term superpower. I think it's overused. I can't stand it. Just say you have a disability.
And I'm going to say you said superpower. I didn't say superpower. Because I don't like it either, but it gives me insight.
Yeah. It's a very powerful tool for your toolbox.
It is.
And I imagine with your coaching, you're helping people discover that about themselves, right? How can they highlight the strengths that their dyslexia or other disabilities may have helped them develop? Because if you, like, for one thing I've found, A lot of the wheelchair users I use, a lot of the people that are visually impaired, they are incredible problem solvers because they have to be. The world is not designed for them. So they have to find a way to adapt to an able-bodied world. And they're incredible problem solvers. So no, the disability isn't the superpower, but their willingness and ability to adapt and overcome, being flexible and being a problem solver, those are incredible assets to any organization, any company, right? I mean, is that how you think of it, or?
Oh, absolutely. We focus so much on the negatives or deficits that those seem to always be in the forefront. And we're not focusing on the strengths and how the strengths can help us with the areas that we struggle with. For example, we always think of people with dyslexia not being good writers, right? But we have tools like Grammarly or computers, voice to text, all of those things that can give us the ability to type or to write or to write a story or whatever it might be, give us that ability so we overcome the handwriting part. That's not part of the issue, or the spelling part.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote a book, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. Number one in 8 countries as of today.
Just putting that out there.
Just gonna say.
No, and that's awesome. I mean, did you ever? And this is being recorded on 21 April 2023. Did you ever think that you were going to be able to write a book? I mean, your bio says you were told you shouldn't even be a teacher. You should, be careful about your career, right?
Yeah, I was told that I wouldn't make it in high school or in college. So I need to think of a different career path. But not going to college was never on my mind. It was just always expected. And I'll tell you, I have 2 master's degrees now. So you can do it if you put your mind to it and advocate for yourself. It's not easy, but absolutely it can be done.
And by the same token, you don't have to go to college to be successful. I mean, that.
Absolutely. You don't have to. And that is also a big thing that I worked with for my kids when I was a teacher, and also for the young adults that I work with in my coaching business. College isn't end all be all. There's so many good careers out there. In my family in the 90s, it was just expected that we would be going to college. You know, I didn't score high enough on the entrance, the exams, the ACT, SAT, didn't score high enough to get into the college that I went to. But I had worked so hard in high school, and it was noticeable that I was working hard, and they knew that I had a learning disability, that my principal wrote a note and helped me get into college.
And continue advocating in college? Do you encourage people to continue advocating for college?
I do, because it helps you in the courses to get the supports that you might need. Now, I say that, and when I was going through college, and again, this is late 90s, early 2000s, I did go through the special education department, the accessibility services at my university, because I knew I needed the extended time on tests. I needed help with notes. I needed all of those things. But with that, it came a lot of pushback from the professors of not wanting me to take a test in a different location, or not wanting to give their notes to me instead of me writing it, or whatever. A lot of pushback. So it takes a lot of courage to be able to walk up to somebody and say, hey, I'm going to go take this test somewhere else with extended time. Because instead of seeing it as something that a person needs, it was seen as something that's not okay. Not everybody else gets to take a longer test, but there's a difference in fair and equal. So I did for my undergrad work with accessibility services. I did for my first master's. My second master's, which is in education, I did not. I didn't go through services, didn't tell anybody, just did it. And I was working full-time and taking a master's program, and it was hard. It took a lot of work because I knew I was working so much harder than everybody else in the class, of just learning the material as well as reading the material. So, you know, that's the way I did it, because I didn't want to, I was afraid of what pushback I might get and I knew that my bandwidth wasn't, I wasn't able to handle it at that time for myself. So I did it on my own.
And what would you tell somebody that you were working with if they said that to you?
Wow, it must have been really hard. What would you have done differently if you could go back?
So what would you have done differently if you could go back?
I'm going to say, I'm going to go back not just for the second master's, but throughout my career, so my adult life. I wish that I would have said more. I wish that I would have spoke up more. I wish that I could have felt empowered to be the voice for people who aren't empowered yet. With that said, better late than never. Doing it now. But I would have been a happier, healthier person if I would have done it earlier. It takes a lot of brain power to hide, to keep something bottle up and to try to be someone that you're not. Like being afraid to ask questions or give ideas in work meetings, because what are they going to think? Am I on track? Am I not on track? And one of the strengths with people with dyslexia, dysgraphia, autism, nerdverse is we think outside the box. We can see big picture easier. So we need to speak up because we need our voices heard and our ideas.
I agree with you. How do you...
How do I say, do you do that?
Well, I'm just thinking it's I've done a lot of work on myself over the years, mm-hmm. and it sucked. Mm-hmm. You know, and most of the time it was because something negative happened, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So how do you help, what can people do to help themselves before that negative event, getting fired or, you know, end of a relationship that didn't have to end as badly as it did, or, mm-hmm. you know, insert problem here.
Right. Oh, I had a really good answer and I'm having a dyslexic moment. It just left me. So I would say to be open to learning about yourself, because it's going to be uncomfortable. And like I say to the clients that I'm working with, it's just like when you start an exercise program, you hurt, your body is in pain. You feel like you have muscles that didn't even exist. And you know, the more you work, the better it feels. You don't have that pain anymore. So as we start working and as you start being open to learning about who you are, it's gonna hurt a little bit. It's gonna be uncomfortable, but that's really where the best growth comes. And if you're wanting to do better in your life and not have the bad breakups or the firing, or then we need to do the work on ourselves. And we need to start, basically just start with going with, I'm worth it, and I'm strong enough to, and I can.
So affirmations.
Affirmations.
And do you recommend people do this on their own, or would you recommend they work with a professional? I mean, there's all kinds of professionals out there, right? There's coaches, there's consultants, mm-hmm. there's therapists. Mm-hmm. I've worked with all three at some point in my career, in my life. I mean.
I've worked with a combination as well throughout my life. Well, when you think of therapists, coaches, and consultants, they have a different role in all of that. So therapists they're looking at the past, more of, is there past trauma? We need to look at what's going on that has led you to this point. Coaches are looking at you at this point and what can they do to help you moving forward. Consultants, they give their opinion. They might answer the questions instead of saying, how would you do that? So it's more of giving their expert advice.
Yeah, and I've had therapists that also give expert advice, you know, to get through a sticky issue.
Sure.
And you know, but do you feel like, would you encourage people who are looking to start this journey, would you encourage them to try do it on their own right away? Or would you say, hey, maybe reach out to one or all of the above professionals? I mean, where would you have them start?
Well, I would say they absolutely have to start with themselves first, right? To say, okay, I think that I do need some help with this. And then to reach out and talk to somebody who's close to you. Because that first phone call, whether you're calling a therapist, consultant, or coach, is hard. And it's hard to say that you need help in something. So I would say, look at yourself, realize that you need the help, and know that it's okay. find somebody that you can talk to help you make that first step to find the professional. And then I would say look for a professional who has experience with executive functioning or learning disabilities.
And let's define that first phone call a little more clearly. And again, this could just be my cynicism and my being so jaded, but you really have to be careful that that first person you reach out to who means well, but says, oh, you're perfect, you don't need to do anything. Because that'll shut the door, right? I mean, or maybe it's just me, but so you have to be careful because sometimes your significant other may not be the one that you should be going to.
You're right. And they might not know how to help you. So it's finding that person. So for example, I have a friend who needed help finding a therapist for their specific reason. It was for grief. I'm not a grief coach or a grief therapist. So she came to me asking if I knew anybody. I told her a name. I gave her the phone number. I checked back a week later. She hadn't made that first step yet. So I asked her, can I help you make that appointment? So we made that appointment together. So that's what I mean by finding somebody to help you make that first step, because it can be hard. Now, I did it without finding a person. I just kind of did it and it was hard. And
that's it's
easier with support, but I was afraid to even tell my closest friends. I couldn't even tell you when I told my husband that I had dyslexia. I couldn't even tell you. But every time I would tell somebody, I would hear, oh, you don't seem like somebody who's dyslexic, you know? Yeah. So you do need to find that person who's able to help you if you need help making that first call.
And my preference is always get the help earlier. I probably should. I didn't get into therapy, I think, till this year. And I needed it, you know, 30 years ago. And I didn't. And I think men are maybe worse than women typically are, but not to go into gender and all that. But
oh, come on.
But I think all of us are quick to say we're fine, right? I mean,
right.
You know, and it's not just our mental health, it's our physical health too, because we don't want to admit when there might be something wrong. Right. Because then we have to face that there might be something wrong. Right. And what if we can't fix it? I think it's the fear that we can't fix it more than knowing there's something wrong that might be holding us back. But I'm not a psychologist, although I did sleep at a Holiday Inn or whatever the place is.
I don't know, Eric. Well, Eric, and on the flip side of all of that is I was first diagnosed with dyslexia in second grade. Now, there's a difference between labeled as learning disabled, which that's what you're going to see on your student's IEP, than being diagnosed as dyslexic, because schools cannot diagnose dyslexia.
Okay. Did it do anything different for you? I mean, again, this is a long time ago, and I feel like hopefully school's gotten better, although from the meetings I've sat on for the special education advisory committees, I don't know that they've gotten much better when it comes to dyslexia. In theory, what should happen? If you get a diagnosis of a dyslexia and in the IEP it's labeled as learning disability, what should happen? What should the schools be doing?
Well, it depends on what that person needs, actually. Okay. So they might need lined paper that has raised lines so they can more easily stay in the lines. They might need extended time. They might need, instead of reading the books, audiobooks. But the one thing I could say that schools overall need to do better, and our culture overall, is to be accepting. If somebody's using something that helps them, like a certain type of pen or certain whatever it might be, it needs to be accepted and okayed. I mean, we don't go around and say things to people who have glasses on, saying, take your glasses off. We're not using that here. We don't do that. So we shouldn't do that for people who might need their computer out so they can take notes or whatever it might be. Just to be more open-minded and not to just, to go back to what you said about labels, not to just read the IEP from the year before and say, oh, this person's learning disabled. Okay, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, but to actually get to know the student and what their strengths are and what they need.
That's awesome. And do you see the pushback coming from other students or from teachers or both?
The pushback for being open-minded and giving the supports, a lot of it is from teachers and administration, from my experience.
So it's not students saying, hey, how come they get to use a computer and I don't? Or how come they get to leave the classroom but I don't?
That definitely, when I was in elementary school and when I was also teaching in middle school, absolutely. Kids are mean. I'm an identical twin sister, and she is not dyslexic. And kids are mean because they just are. That's a whole nother topic. But, you know, if I had a student who asked me, why did they get to go? You can't say because they're disabled. You can't say because they have a learning disability. You just say, I'm just going to go work with them. Or when I was working in regular ed classes, I would take the kids who needed support and we'd go to the library and work instead of just focusing on the kids with the IEP, because there might be kids that are ELL or might be a kid who's just struggling in that area. So I would take them all. So it was really kind of cool to go with me because I always had food as well. So making a more inclusive environment.
Very cool. Very cool. So let's talk a bit more about your coaching. What can somebody expect when they reach, kind of walk me through from the initial phone call and kind of a taste of the kinds of things you're helping people with.
Mm-hmm. So the discovery call, we will really just be talking about what is your goal? Like, what do you want or what do you need out of getting help from someone? I'm going to say this for therapy consultants, coaches. It's okay to say our personalities aren't gelling. It's okay. It's okay to say, I've had two sessions with this person. They don't get me. A lot of times we might be not wanting to do that. So I use a discovery session as really, this is me, this is you, could we work together type of scenario. So first off, when they first start talking to me, we're really going to look at strengths, that there's so many different ways to be smart. It's not just how well you read a book. And that's typically the way that we view intelligence in the school system, at least, is how smart you are with reading. But there's so many other ways that people can be smart. So we look at that and we use that as a basis for moving forward. Okay, so here's how you are. So for me, I'm intra and interpersonal tied very high. So how am I going to use that knowledge going forward? How am I going to use that knowledge to apply to my deficits or learn about, okay, this is kind of the balance of the two areas, strengths and deficits, as well as I know this, what can I use it for in my life? Like, should I change jobs? Should I go in a different direction? Should I set a goal? Should I, you know, like, what am I going to do? So really we focus on the strengths. We focus on learning about ourselves and who we are. And then where do we want
to
go?
And then the follow-on sessions are just playing to those, whatever those goals are, helping them set things in place to achieve the goals. And maybe they may meet the goal and then decide, oh, I have this new goal I want to work on, or what have you. Okay. Yeah. And I think that's some, well, let me reframe this. Are you more of a, yeah, you have deficits, but we can spend the time to work on those to get them better? Or are you more of a, these are your strengths, let's really focus on the strengths and not worry about so much about the deficits? Or do you fall somewhere in the middle?
I'm more in the middle. We need to know where we struggle.
Sure.
So we know how we can support that struggle. So yes, we need to know our deficits, but we seem to know our deficits a lot more than we know our strengths. So
well, people are quicker to point them out, right? I mean,
right. Very much so. And we are our worst critics. So our inner voice, our gremlins going on, tell us what we are not good at on a regular basis, but we don't hear our strengths. So that's why I'm really pushing that, is because we have deficits, we all do, but how can we use our strengths to accommodate our deficits?
Or find things like Grammarly to replace the deficit.
Right.
Like, you know, for me, I have no interest in shoring up a lot of my deficits. Like I lack empathy or certain types of, you know, there's two types of empathy or whatever, but the bottom line is I'm not very empathetic when I'm talking to somebody if they have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, I'm just waiting for them to tell me what they're going to do about it. And I'm not there.
Right.
You know, And I know that about myself. And mm-hmm. I've discovered working with my therapist and my business coach, I don't really care. It used to bother me that it bothered people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I would be bothered because people were bothered and they would, make my life I would let them make my life uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, yeah, whatever. But I mean, I say that acknowledging the work it took to get here.
Right.
And I'm saying that for the benefit of the people out there that they might have deficits that feel so overwhelming that they feel that it's hopeless and they're never going to be able to overcome them. And that's mm-hmm. how I felt about this empathy thing. I mean, I even got an associate's degree in social work to try to be squishier. Mm-hmm. I acknowledge that there is that, holy crap, this is such a big deficit. There's mm-hmm. nothing I can do. But then it's like, well, why do you have to do anything about it? That's where I'm going is mm-hmm. do you actually have to do anything about it? Right. If you're not a serial killer, I mean,
And isn't it helpful to know that, yeah, that's not something I'm particularly good at or enjoy. So I'm going to go do this instead. So that's also what I mean by using your strengths to help your deficits is it's okay if you're not empathetic, Eric. That's fine. It really is. There's enough of us that are.
I just shouldn't be a funeral home director.
Right. Exactly. But you're not trying to put yourself in a box that isn't a good fit for you. And so that's why it's also helpful to be aware of those deficits and to acknowledge them and to be okay with yourself.
And that's where the help can come in, right? Like,
right.
Trying to fix it on my own. I got there and fits and spurts, but nowhere near as successfully as I have since working with a therapist and the mm-hmm. coach, mm-hmm. who are giving me very different things. To your point earlier about what the different roles they fill. I did take my business coach happens to be a licensed psychologist. So she's not giving me therapy, but she's got the mindset that I find really helpful when she's serving either a consultant or a coach role. So where I was going with that is I want people to understand, and again, I'm going to be a little bit sexist here. I want women to understand that it's okay that they aren't perfect and they don't meet all the wickets, right? And I say that because I've read studies where men will apply for a job if they only have 2 out of the 10, requirements. Mm-hmm. Whereas a woman could have 8 of the 10 and still won't apply because she won't feel she's qualified.
Yes. I agree with that. I've done that.
And I don't know if that has anything to do with the hidden disability. I'm sure it doesn't make it any easier.
It's just another layer that, yeah, you're a woman, so you have those as well as now you're going to label, have a disability on top of that. And then, yes. So it's another hurdle for sure.
And do you find women more than men struggle with dyslexia, or is it general agnostic?
I don't know the numbers off the top of my head right now, but I will say that women in general reach out for help more, or reach out for services, or more open with emotions and mental health needs. So we're going to have more numbers in that regard, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's more in general, more people who have it.
So men could actually be struggling, but just not being getting the help they need.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of diagnosis, we know with autism and with several other disabilities, the diagnosis is skewed heavily for white men mm-hmm. and underrepresented by people of color and women.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that you could see that across the board on many different things, not just the autism, for sure.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So if somebody wanted to learn more, do they have to have a diagnosis to work with you?
No, not at all. Nope. Do not require that. Will not ask if you have one. It's just, what are you needing? What do you want to work on? How can I help?
And if somebody wanted to learn more, where would they go to find you?
You can go to my website, lettyglenncoaching.com.
And you've been on several podcasts already, right?
I have.
Mm-hmm. And those are on the podcast. I'll include links in the show notes, but they're on your website if they want to listen. I like podcasts because I feel like you get a feel for the person. Mm-hmm. You kind of get a feel for who they are, what they're like, personality comes through, at least in podcasts like this, where there's back and forth.
Right. There's a link on my website that says podcasts. So you can go to that. And I also have some helpful blogs that are on there as well.
And you wrote a book, you said.
And I wrote a book.
What's the book? What was the book about?
It's Transforming Your Life. And my part is about becoming who I am today and all the battles and successes that we have. But it's when you're looking for someone to be your coach, it's helpful to have someone who has made that journey, who has traveled that journey. It's not end all be all, but it's helpful to have that person to shed light on what might be the next step or what are some things that could be helpful.
How come?
Relatability, for one. It's nice to know that you're not alone or that you're not weird or that, like I said earlier about my client with the handwriting, that, you know, there are very similar things that you can feel connection with, because when you have a disability, especially invisible, and maybe you haven't been diagnosed or you're just starting your journey of learning more about yourself, it's isolating. Absolutely. And so it's helpful to make a connection with somebody who might be able to empathize in a different way.
I can appreciate that. You know, my business coach is a woman, so she's not a man, obviously. She's never served in the military, you know, so I'm not, you know, but I wasn't looking for any of that when I hired her. She's very good about what I needed her for, which was to help me with self-talk and figure out a lot of it is just figuring out where I'm going. Mm-hmm. You know, I needed a sounding board that I felt I could trust, that I could just non-judgmental, let me figure out what the heck's going on. Mm-hmm. And then the therapist is a fellow, he's a parent of a child with a disability, but he's also not a veteran, because, you know, the things I wanted to get out of therapy had nothing to do with my time in service. Mm-hmm. You know, so I guess I could see where you're coming from. You know, it is helpful. You know, a lot of therapists, I don't think, are going to share that they have a diagnosis necessarily. Mm-hmm. Maybe they will. I don't know. I mean, I'm not in that world, but I don't know that they do. But coaches, I think, will, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, you're nodding, but it's a podcast, so people couldn't.
Yes, they can. But again, it's all on whether or not someone is comfortable with sharing, because it's not something that you have to share.
Right. I think it goes back to what you said earlier about personality fit, right?
Right.
And if the coach or therapist or consultant says, hey, we're just not a good fit, don't take it personally. They're probably doing you a huge favor. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, I've always said that. Make sure that whoever you're talking to, you feel like they get you.
Right. And if I have somebody that I'm not a good fit with, I'm not just going to say, okay, bye. I'm going to come up with some referrals for you and ideas on where to go next. But to your point of supports that I've reached out for, it's been things that I wanted to learn more about, not necessarily centered around my disability. So it is kind of thinking of what type of help are you looking for and what type of help are you needing?
Yeah. Now, this has been awesome, Letty. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't yet, I would really appreciate it if you could leave me a review and or share the podcast. My preference would be to share it with somebody that you think can get a lot of use out of it. I've been told that reviews help people find my podcast, but honestly, I just would really rather this get into the ears of people that can use the help. And the way I know that happens is by somebody sharing a podcast saying, hey, I really took away a lot from this episode. I think you will too. So if you could do that for me, I'd really appreciate it. The comments, the reviews, the feedback, that's all to help me be a better podcast host. If there's guests that you would like to see or topics you would like covered, please reach out to me, Eric at speciallyneedsnavigator.us. I'm always open. I'm also open to introductions. If there's somebody that you think would be a great guest, please make the introduction, and I'd love to talk to them. Thanks for listening.